Welcome, everybody. This is All About Symbian Insight podcast number 177, recording this on Friday, the 29th of July, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield. Down in Sussex, I have...
Rafe Plamford.
And up in sunny Scotland, I have...
Ewan Spence. And not only is it sunny today, it's the day that the National Museum opens again. Yay!
Ewan's going to dash off there, so if he disappears halfway through the podcast, that's him and his family done for the day. So
no, that's because Sky have bought half the podcast.
All right. Very topical, yes, yes. No. Look up. But on with the show. We have a rather bits and pieces show, lots of little interesting tidbits to talk about. Start off with the official kind of news of the week, which is that Nokia have said that Ovi Store is now passing 7 million downloads a day. Now, how significant is this, Rafe?
Yes, that's right, Steve. 7 million. Yes, I do think this is pretty significant. It shows that they're continuing to grow downloads from the Ovi Store, you know, despite all the bad news they've been having recently in terms of smartphone sales. Ovi Store, you know, remains something of a positive spot, really. And, you know, of course, if they're downloading more on a daily basis, that means more people are using apps, games and other content on their phone. This one's worth mentioning, really, because it's happened quite quickly. Developer post about this said that the store had reached 7.62 million downloads in a single day. I think averaging that out probably means 7 million a day. In terms of where that's grown from, that was 6 million in June, and so the 6.5 million was mentioned in the earnings post. The reason there's been this sudden jump is actually because Nokia have removed the registration and login requirement for the mobile web version for free downloads. So basically it's removing one of the barriers to download to make things easier to download. That affects mainly Series 40 devices, so I suspect the new downloads here are mainly from Series 40 devices. But nonetheless, you know, it's a pretty big increase. In terms of sort of where that means it's going, in terms of annualising of figures, that goes up to 2.55 billion a year, which is getting pretty heavy. I think actually maybe by the time this podcast goes live, and certainly within the first week or two of August, Nokia should pass the 2 billion mark in terms of cumulative downloads. And we've sort of said before, we estimate that that will reach 3 billion by the end of the year. So, you know, it's all pretty encouraging. The gap, obviously, up to things like Android Marketplace and App Store is still quite significant, but as we mentioned on a recent podcast, perhaps not as big as people might think. And if Nokia can, you know, continue this growth trend, and there's every reason to expect them to do so, I mean, they've come up from, you know, around the 3 million mark in sort of September, October of last year. I mean, looking at the beginning of the year, they were at sort of 4 million or so, and they increased by a million or so for each of the first 3 months, and then they've had this big jump. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this hit the 8 or 9 million mark by the end of the year. So all in all, you know, pretty positive news as far as Ovi Store downloads are concerned.
Yeah, we do get the regular breakouts from the various Ovi Store guys, don't we, Rafe, in terms of which devices see the most downloads in each region of the world. And that's, but they never give exact figures, but they do give which are the most popular devices. And I'm sure we can report further on that and then work out which ones are, which, whether it's Series 40 or Symbian 3 or Symbian Anna driving the downloads.
Yes, that's right. I mean, in terms of the downloads, it's still Symbian dominating. I think that's for fairly obvious reasons, that people tend to download more stuff on their smartphones. And a lot of it's to do with how popular the devices are. So the Symbian 3 devices are unsurprisingly sitting in there in most countries. And then it's some of the older popular devices, things like the 5800, but also the 5230. But you're right, that does vary from market to market. In terms of a broad picture, I think Series 40 is now responsible for about a third of downloads, which, you know, does suggest to me there's a bit of an untapped potential there. You know, at moment in time, I think the majority of those are probably free downloads. We're going to have a sort of look at this in more detail in due course, but there's a lot more to come there. And obviously things are going to change a bit when we get Windows Phone along, although as Nokia have said, they'll be keeping their own branded store, so quite how all the branding works is not clear, but they will certainly have their own version of a store on Windows Phone. And it's not going to be sort of a sub store as you kind of get on some of the current Windows Phone devices like an Orange or a Samsung's, and sitting within the kind of Windows Phone Microsoft store. We're actually being told it's going to be a separately branded application, sort of a fully Nokia brand experience, and will obviously tie in with experience. Obviously, it's not going to be called Ovi Store. It's probably going to be called Nokia Store or something like that. And Ovi Store itself will continue for the many Symbian devices to come, and obviously Series 40 devices as well. And we know that future Series 40 is going to have apps at its center with, you know, cute and web-based apps. So I think there's, you know, a lot more to come from that. So despite the fact people go, Ovi Store, not interested in that anymore, it's sort of part of the past because, you know, it's going away. Actually, that's not true. It's far from the case. So, you know, it's interesting keeping an eye on this, and I suspect we'll see more movement on how exactly the Windows Phone side of the story is going to work in due course.
Yeah, I've got one more comment. Just while I'm doing that, Rafe, if you could dial David Gilson into the call because he's waiting to come in. Yes, looking at the charts you've done, Rafe, it becomes apparent that unlike the market share charts and the sales charts, there's actually no February the 11th effect on the obvious store download numbers. And I think that basically reflects what I've been saying all along, is that the number of active Symbian users out there is very, very large. And although maybe new sales aren't rising, certainly in line with the rest of the industry, and maybe even falling quarter on quarter, there's still an awful lot of millions of smartphones out there running Symbian who are discovering the Ovi Store and downloading stuff for the first time.
That's right. It's always easy to forget the installed base and sort of, you know, just concentrate on the new sales. But you can see, I mean, if you look at the Ovi Store downloads, it's, you know, been increasing gradually, as I described, and there's been two big bumps, and one was sort of around the October-November mark, which represented new Symbian 3 devices coming on, and we've had a similar size bump in the last month, which in this case is about, you know, removal of registration requirements. So it just goes to show, actually, factors outside device sales will often have a bigger impact than you know, you might imagine. And yes, in that sense, things are pretty healthy. I mean, in one sense, it's a reflection of Nokia playing catch-up on the apps and games, and of course, the content isn't quite as healthy, but they are managing to drive quite a few downloads. I think it's quite interesting if you compare this, you know, the smartphone situation is one thing. Of course, you then look at maybe the feature phones, and actually Nokia's probably healthier there than many of its competitors in terms of having a dedicated store. And even the smartphone stuff, you know, they're having a pretty good success in terms of reaching lots of different markets. And we've spoken to plenty of developers saying, you know, it's giving us unparalleled reach, 200 countries and more in some cases. And, you know, in-app advertising, you know, people are making money through that. So although it's not quite the, you know, gold rush stories you get sometimes from the iOS applications, there are plenty of success stories out there. But I mean, it's part of a wider trend, I suppose, of application and content on phones starting to generate money in a more meaningful way. And yes, one sense Nokia's playing catch up, but there's a force to be reckoned with, as you say, simply because of the installed user base.
So, but hello to David there, by the way.
Hello there. Yes, nice to be here. Sorry, I was a little late.
No worries, you can. We must just dash to Ewan before he dashes off to the museum. So you wanted to talk about modern Symbian games, Ewan?
Yeah, and it kind of ties in with the whole Ovi Store and everything. And this is something that we've all noticed, you know, about Symbian team over the last couple of months. If we look back 6 to 9 months, finding titles to review, especially on the new devices like the N8, but also looking back to the 5th edition devices, it took a bit of time. You know, it was a case of there is something new. And, you know, there was maybe only 2 or 3 updates every or new games every day. Now we're seeing many, many more updates coming in on a daily basis. We're seeing a bundle of really mature gaming titles. And we're getting to the point now where we can pick and choose what we want to review rather than going, that's available now. So I know we've got empirical evidence here that people said, oh, there are these 7 million downloads a day, and people will start poo-pooing, and I go, oh, it's all screen savers, it's just little cutesy pictures, it's not really a download, it's not a download like they have in American app stores, it doesn't really count. Well, you know, empirically, yes, there's more going out, but, you know, emotionally, I mean, Steve, you'll agree to yourself because you really keep on top of the sort of apps coming out then. Yeah. You know, there is more. There's more to choose from. Those choices are of much better quality. There's a lot more cross-platform stuff coming out. And for everybody who says that, you know, the apps are the dying market of Symbian, you know, my personal experience is that they're not. You know, yeah, there are still some games out there that are complete rubbish, but you know what? You still get rubbish games for the PlayStation 3, for the Xbox 360, for Android, for iOS. There's bundle of really good games coming out, and some of them are Symbian-specific too.
Yeah. Rafe just popped the stat in that 50 games were added in the last week for Symbian devices in the Obvious Store and 121 applications. So that's each week.
So, and Rafe, that's from our tracking. Those aren't official Nokia numbers. Yeah, we should stress that, shouldn't we?
Yes, we should. That's from our own tracking numbers.
Yes,
and
we
that's
should.
Specifically
he's nodding in the
background. Putting as well, so I'll go on the record and say that I think the Symbian games are actually stand out a lot more in terms of quality and graphics and gameplay than you can actually get on Android, which is surprising.
Yeah, that really surprised me as well, David. I mean, I've got several Android devices here, and I love the OS. I write about it for various magazines as well, so I'm truly multi-platform. And I've seen some fabulous games of iOS, even in the early days, you know, of their own app store. Within 6 months, you had some sumptuous games. Within 6 months of Symbian 3 devices being available with their graphics acceleration chips, again, you had some pretty sumptuous, extravagant games. Some of these recent games have been hundreds of megabytes worth of graphics and video sequences and all the rest of it, sound effects. And yet Android, which has been out for much longer than Symbian 3 and with a massive, massive worldwide developer community, just hasn't seen the same quality and quantity of really good games. I'm absolutely staggered. Maybe there's something in the fact that the games have been written in this sort of Java-like environment. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there are issues to do with the writing a really graphically intensive action game. Rafe, any thoughts?
Well, I think part of the reason for this on Android, at least, is until relatively recently, some of the monetization options were limited in their geographic extent. And obviously, these high-end games do tend to be the ones that are quite costly to develop and often done by some of the existing games houses, you know, like EA Games or Gameloft or something like that. And yes, there's probably some underlying technical reasons, although there's no reason why you can't do OpenGL-based games in Android. But I think, you know, one of the unsung strengths of OvviStore, and the, you know, to a lesser extent this applies to iOS as well, is that, you know, it's available in terms of actually being able to buy things in multiple countries. Now, Android has increased that recently, so I wonder if we might see that trend change. But up until relatively recent times, the number of places where, as an Android developer, you could actually sell your games was a little bit limited, so that might be one of the reasons.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
In terms of those numbers talking about, yes, just to confirm, they're from All About Symbian Tracking, and they specifically exclude things that we consider spam applications, so that's things like Ovi App Wizard or RSS feeds or comics or things like that. So it's kind of the higher quality games and applications, if you like. And I'm sure someone will jump in and say that's nothing compared to what's being added to Android or iOS, but I think
I did that voice earlier.
But the point I was trying to make there is actually it's more than most people would tend to realize, you know, having written off Symbian as a dead platform. And it's enough that each week there's some new content, so that if people do want to go ahead and consume a new game or a new app, there's actually enough out there to go and have a bit of a choice and look through the obvious one and say, yes, I'd like to try that. And of course, that's building all the time. So that's why I sort of talked about those numbers are perhaps healthier than some people might realize, although I do appreciate it's nothing like the kind of the avalanche you see being added typically to Android and iOS. But as we've mentioned before, it's not always about quantity, it's sometimes about quality too, though I suspect Nokia would be happy to see a bit of both.
I'm just going to, this might seem quite cynical, but the level of the quality of games, and I'd love to hear everyone's opinion, but Steve, I'll come to you first, having someone that's watched the games market since the 90s in PDA. Because Symbian is harder to code for, it has more quirks. So the people who've reached a competent level have more skill at programming than your average bedroom coder. Has an impact on the quality of Symbian games. Discuss.
Yes, I think that there's probably an element of truth in that. Certainly the fact that we haven't got 10,000 games appearing each week means that there's less chance a really good game will get lost in the mix as well. I think that's an important fact. I can scan through the, 50 games added in the last week, and I can scan through those 50, pick out the three or four which actually look pretty decent, and we get a stab at reviewing them. Whereas if there were 10,000 released or 1,000 released every week, then things would just simply get lost. So we can say, yes, higher quality games on average, and also there's less chance to get missed.
I think it's probably a fair comment. I'd point out that Qt has made things considerably easier, and of those 50 or so games we're talking about, 13 or so were written in Qt. And looking at those, some of those have been fantastic games, some of them may be less so. But it's probably fair to say that, you know, you still get some of the really, I think, poorly coded games, especially ones that are Java ports from feature phones or something like that. They do make their way into OvviStore, particularly for the older devices. But in general, there does seem to be one or two games each week, which is a really nice quality. And, you know, if you're a general game, it will be enough to keep you satisfied, I'd have thought. It is fair to say that the big hit titles, I think, still often come out on iOS in particular first. And sure. You know, they sometimes get ported onto, you know, the other platforms. I actually get less concerned about that because I think really it's about having enough fresh stuff is the important factor. And, you know, having hundreds of games is less important than having, you know, a bit of fresh content each week, some of which are quite good. And the problem actually with the quantity thing is, of course, the discovery on all the current app stores is, you know, pretty poor. Identifying what is that good game or that good application is pretty hard. And we see that a lot on All About Cinema, when people go, oh, I missed this app or I missed that game. Thank you for reviewing it or letting us know about it. And you consider that's happening with relatively few titles compared to, say, iOS or Android. It does say to me that discovery is still by far and away the biggest issue in terms to discovering what's good.
What's needed? Oh, I can put my COVID doctor voice on. The biggest problem in the 21st century is not piracy, but obscurity.
And I think I would say is that whereas in general Symbian may not be the developer's best friend, I think games is a special case. Because especially on Android, it's very difficult to develop games because of the fragmentation. You have different screen resolutions and third-party apps. Say third-party keyboards for it is a good example, really interfering with things. Whereas on Symbian, things are fairly uniform and it's a lot easier to, less complicated to develop for.
Yeah, unless you've got a Nokia E6, of course, in which case things are out the window. Mm. What's needed, of course, Rafe, is that some sort of wonderful interactive system on our site where people could see at a glance what's new and what's really good. Any chance that might happen?
Yes, I think that's quite possible, Steve. I think you're probably doing a sneaky plug stroke leak for something I've been working on for a while in terms of being able to better track some of the updates that are going into Ovi Store. And we actually use it ourselves internally to sort of track what's good in terms of application games and what's being added. And that's how we've been able to come up with some of the things that we review or mention on the site. And yes, it should be being made available more publicly in due course. I don't want to put myself under any particular time pressure for that, but it will be a way of seeing, you know, what's really been added to Ovi Store as opposed to the current new list, which on the site itself, I think probably fair to say they're not the most reliable or most accurate of lists.
Yeah, yeah. While I give David some breathing space to just bring up the Cute Box details, I want to get his take on the Cute Box news. Ewan, now you reviewed Asphalt 5, came out for Symbian 3 about only 3 or 4 months ago. And it's fair to say you found it a tiny bit lacking in every department. Asphalt 6, a mere 4 months later, has now appeared. Asphalt 6 Adrenaline HD. I actually rather liked it. Did you actually install this or at least watch the videos from version 6?
I had a quick look at this, and it's more of the same. It's everything that a sequel should be. It's slightly bigger, it's slightly faster, there's slightly more money spent on the computer graphics, and Steve Guttenberg doesn't appear. So all in all, it's a raised thumbs over Asphalt 5, whatever the subtitle of Asphalt 5 was. Again, it's a long-running series, and this is also another thing. I'm going to swing back to Games Market. Comfort is also very important to people who are just browsing through the store. If someone is looking for a driving game and they see Hokey Cokey Driving Sim number 7 from, from, I don't know, let's say 3Lib, for example. And then they see Asphalt 6, 7, 97, whatever, yeah, from Gameloft.
Yeah.
There's going to be a natural tendency to swing to the Gameloft one because, simple fact, name recognition and brand recognition, sure, uncomfortable. Things like, that's why FIFA released a new football. There's a new EA FIFA game every year and Tiger Woods game and all of that. So the fact that we're getting these big names into the store is a good thing. But more than above that, the fact that we're getting these big names in and they come back again, that means that they basically went, you know what? We made money. Now, yeah, whether that's from the users buying it, advertising in the application, affiliate sales, or somebody from Finland has given them a dump truck of money to make sure that they stay in the store, it doesn't actually matter. It gives confidence to the people using the Nokia / OV store, wherever we are, and can we call it Nokia store yet? Debate that remains to be seen. But that idea of going, look, you're going to get the applications you want. You're going to see names that you recognize. You know, given the choice of a store that's full of 100,000 Hokey Cokey Pit Stop Sims from 3Lib, no offense, Steve, or 50,000 games from the likes of EA and Gameloft and so on, you know, you would tend to aim for the one that's 50,000 because you'll get picked up in the gaming press. You'll be seen as being respectable. You'll be seen as being the place to be. And that's when you can slip in new companies like Rovio, who will then go on to become the big names. But until you have that confidence to start with, for the user's point of view, that they're getting stuff that they want to be seen playing, then you can't go anywhere. Nokia's store, you know, they tried to seed that with Engage way back in 2000, blah, 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 by getting the big names in. And they've kind of stayed in, but it's nice to see that we still have Gameloft and Asphalt going in there. And anybody who's any sense will notice that I've not actually mentioned the gameplay yet.
Well, Asphalt 6, to bring it back on topic, is, as Ewan said, it's a screaming riot of going zooming around corners without actually feeling like you're going around corners, and colliding with things without actually sustaining any real damage, and picking up lots of things which shouldn't really be on the track in the first place. But the graphics are great, the sound's great, the frame rate is now up, and I would recommend Asphalt 6. If nothing else, is a really great demo of what Symbian 3 can do with the right hardware inside it. So Asphalt 6, it's only £3 good, for goodness sake. I remember when game titles for my PC used to be £20-30 a time. Certainly for the Nintendo DS, they're still £20-30 a time when they come out. This is £3. It's 300 megabytes worth, and it's probably got about 200 hours of gameplay. So I reckon that's value for money. Talking of value for money, even better value for money, Cutebox was always one of our favourite little applications, stroke utilities, David, and it's now free, I gather.
Yes, it is. And as you said, it is, I think it's all around, it is our favourite Dropbox application. Rafe reviewed it a while ago in March, and I've since started using it, and I rely on it all the time, especially for uploading review screenshots to my desktop, for example. The author made a couple of tweets a couple of days ago, and I think basically it's helped the story well if I just quote the tweets.
Sure.
The author, Catalin, says, I've made double the number of downloads in less than a day with the free app than in 3 months with the paid app. Interesting numbers, 354 paid downloads in 3 months, 653 free ones in less than a day. Free is the way to go with other means of monetization. Quite what he or she means by other means of monetization, we don't yet know. I don't know if Cutebox is going to be ad-supported or what. We will have to wait and see. Previously, it did cost £1.50 or, to our American friends, a couple of bucks. So hopefully people who have paid for it won't feel too cheated. And it has been well worth the money. So, yes, just if you use Dropbox and you want to use it with your Symbian phone, just go to the Ovi store and search for Cutebox, Cutebox.
Yeah, lovely. And of course, monetizing free applications is something that we're coming back to in our series that we've just started on, all about Symbian, which is kind of ad-sponsored in its own sense. We have full editorial control, as Rafe commented on our recent story. And this is not a question of some other company coming and writing content for our site. It's simply that they're helping us put resources into the site so we can explore this topic in a bit more detail. So do watch this space for more in that series. Near Field Communications, NFC, is really a technology that's coming on stream this year in a big, big way. I saw NFC Hub being launched, Ray, and this really interests me. This is Nokia has launched it. It's kind of an organization, or I guess it's a profit-making organization, to help businesses using NFC with things like posters, stickers, business cards. And basically, they're producing NFC tags to order, starting at £3, and they go up to about £25 for the bigger posters with the NFC chip built in, and you can tell it which URL or which promotional message or which social network you want it to tie into. You said you perhaps might get one of these for All About Symbian to play with, Rafe.
Yes, I'm definitely going to get one of these for All About Symbian, because at the moment, one of the problems with testing NFC stuff is there isn't an awful lot about. And actually, I think this kind of interaction, you know, using it to link to the physical world, if you like, as you say, you know, favouriting a Facebook page or joining a Twitter feed or whatever it happens to be, is actually a great example of how NFC could be quite practical. I, you know, have my doubts in one sense, in that it's going to be very early days for NFC, so the number of consumers in a coffee shop or a shop with an NFC-enabled phone that then realise they can tap to do something is going to be pretty small. Nonetheless, you know, I think it's a good idea to have this sort of thing available so that people who want to get some kind of NFC-enabled promotional material can do so. And, you know, one of the ones they have is a business card. So I think it'll be worth picking one of these up for, you know, the next big mobile conference where there's going to be a higher strike rate of NFC devices. And rather than having that rather complicated Bluetooth dance when you try and exchange details via your device, which never actually works, never actually happens, you just hand over a business card. I wonder if, here, scan my NFC business card might not become a more common occurrence. You know, it is, of course, early days. But yes, this is a nice idea. And I think probably Nokia running this scheme, I suspect it's not really aimed at making profits. It's just enabling businesses to get their, you know, promotional materials that are NFC enabled quickly and easily. But, you know, for a coffee shop or any kind of retail outlet, it kind of makes sense to stick one of these in the window. After all, you know, it's early enough days that people will be curious about it, might ask about it. And, you know, anything you can do to kind of boost your social media outlets or, you know, get more followers is going to be a good thing. And certainly at the moment, I think people will try it out just for the novelty value. Maybe a bit of support to do. So I think some retailers might think twice about this. But nonetheless, you know, a very clever idea, and making it readily available, you just fill in a few things on a website, you know, with the details that you want for your campaign, all makes it very easy. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's ridiculously easy to set up, say, compared to the Bluetooth stations that you used to be offered to retailers for, you know, thousands of pounds, which were kind of doing a similar job.
I had a Bluetooth offer the other day from Pizza Hut, just wandering past, and I had a will you accept a Bluetooth message from Pizza Hut. I said yes, and they then send a Bluetooth message, which turns out to be a picture, which that then opened in the photo browser, which took about 10 seconds to start because the number of photos I got, and the whole experience was very unjoined up. It took about 30 to 40 seconds from start to finish, and that's certainly not ideal. And I think for many consumers, even that would be too long. Just to comment on the NFC hub, there's on their site, they've got a number of videos which very, very well demonstrate the sort of things you can do. So if nothing else, go to the NFC hub website, which is, he said frantically, it's nfc-hub.com, and look in their videos section, because it really gives an idea of how it works in practice and what people see on their screen. Just a comment on business cards though, Rafe. Maybe it's just me, but whenever I go to these business conferences, even in 2009, 2010, 2011, I am saying, here are my details. I want to Bluetooth them to your Bluetooth smartphone. We've all had Bluetooth smartphones for 8 years, for goodness sake. And every single time, they look embarrassed and they shuffle their feet and they hand me a paper business card and say, where's your paper business card? So I'm not, good luck with your NFC business card, Rafe. I'm not entirely sure things don't work out that quickly.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get that. I mean, I've had the same experience. Bluetooth never works at conferences. There's far too many devices around. So, yes, I'm afraid I'm one of those who always hands over a paper business card. But I fondly imagine that I could stick my NFC business card in my registration badge holder or something like that and go, here, just scan it. And, I mean, to be fair to NFC, it should work with no trouble in that particular set of circumstances. And I'm just imagining there might be a high hit rate of people with NFC devices. I mean, I think these days people are a lot easier to find online, so the whole business card issue has become a little bit more of a moot issue. But nonetheless, I think that's one of the potential use of this technology that does make more sense. And we've talked about NFC in terms of, you know, being mobile payments, and I'm sure that will come in time, but there's a lot more kind of lower hanging fruit, not just this kind of tap to connect to things, which I think is great. We're also going to see it on headsets and speakers and things like that. And certainly as the initial way to get NFC focus into people's minds, that's, you know, a good thing to do.
Now, one utility which we loved over the years and on the All About Symbian team is Pixelpipe, which lets you get your media, your photos and videos that you've just captured up to a staggering variety of sharing sites and social networks. I gather there's some disappointing news though, David.
Yes, that's right. And just to recap for anyone who hadn't used Pixelpipe or hadn't heard of it, the real power of it was that you could upload content to it, and that could either be status updates, images, videos, or any other type of file to a vast array of different services. And you could actually upload once and publish to many services simultaneously. So it was really helpful. And they started out as a plugin for Nokia Share Online, and then their pièce de résistance was creating an application called Send and Share, which added itself directly into the native Symbian Send menu. So it really put things on a par with, say, the sharing power in Android. However, over the past few months, many of us in the Symbian community have noticed that Send and Share was not on the Ovi store, and it's also disappeared from the Android market and Apple iTunes store. And Pixelpipe have not said anything. Their blog hasn't been updated in a year, although we've spotted online that they have been answering direct queries. And for example, on Twitter, Diogo Nevev was saying what has happened to your mobile apps, and Pixelpipe said in reply, we are no longer distributing those applications. And there was a similar reply to a query on the customer service community site. Get satisfaction. Yeah. He says, we are no longer distributing the application. However, you can use Nokia Social or email for uploading. So we just don't know what's happening with Pixelpipe. You can still use the service, but you are stuck with either uploading to the desktop website or uploading from your phone via email. And if you have a Pixelpipe account and you go into your settings, you will be able to find a secret email address just for you, which you send to it, although you will have to type in manually the routing tags so that your content goes to where you want it to go.
Is it possible, David, that the Pixelpipe just found the whole supporting their applications so hard? If people who've tried it will know what I mean. You start up the Pixelpipe configuration web page, and there for every single social network, there are about three or four different options. And I'm fairly experienced with mobile applications and technology, and I found it confusing as heck. And if they're getting support requests from just about every single user, then you can quickly understand why for a free system, why they said, look, this can't go on. We can't afford the manpower. Let's just leave it running as is for existing users via email and just move on to our next project.
That's certainly one theory. I mean, and they have been doing other projects, such as the Gmail apps browser, yeah. And they've been doing clients, Qt WebKit-based clients for Facebook and Twitter as well. So, I mean, they are an active team. They haven't just, like, all gone their separate ways, as far as we know. The thing is, I would say that's a false economy, because people can still sign up to the website, and the way that people have to use it now is actually more complicated than using Send and Share. So they could be getting as many calls for help. I will just throw in as a quick plug, we actually got a suggestion from our friend Ricky Cadden in the comments to my news story that we should do a summary of alternatives for sharing content, which I took upon myself to do, and there is an article on All About Symbian now, and it went up this morning, and there are a few comments already, people saying, oh, you didn't include this and you didn't include that. Well, I am going to be adding, as time goes on, I will be adding suggestions to it, so if you go to All About Symbian and look at my article, you can, and you find something that I haven't covered, just put it in the comments and I'll add it to the table for people to look up in the future.
Yes, and the title of that article is called Summary of Symbian Content Sharing, should you not be able to find it and want to search for it. Summary of Symbian Content Sharing, and it can kind of grow to be a little directory of what's available, I guess. One final item before we finish. GPS InfoQt doesn't sound very exciting, but this is notable for a couple of reasons. Now, there was a GPS information utility, which I had a look at and reviewed about a month ago, and in one of the comments, one of the Qt developers around the world popped up and said, hey, Steve, would you like me to have a go at making this in Qt? And I thought, well, why not? Let's see what you can do. I think it was about 24 hours later, he presented me with a more or less finished utility. He'd done this literally in a day, and presumably that's not working all 24 hours. So it just demonstrates how fast Qt development can be once you've got your head around it, and it's a fairly rapid application environment. Sort of thing. And there's the Qt Mobility Wraith, there's Qt Quick, isn't there? And there's the raw Qt itself. So there's plenty of ways of getting applications up very quickly.
Yes, that's right. I mean, in terms of the things we're talking about there, kind of Qt's a core language. Then there's Qt Mobility, which is mobile-specific APIs around sending SMS and location stuff as well as it happens. And yes, then there's Qt Quick, which is actually a way of doing UI, kind of an add-on in one sense to the main Qt core. And also worth mentioning is Qt WebKit, which enables you to develop kind of, if you like, web-based applications very quickly. It effectively allows you to embed a browser control in your application. So we're actually seeing quite a few of those coming along where people have basically just saying, right, here's the browser control, that's the full application window, then linking it to a mobile site, which gives kind of the, if you like, the feel of a native application, but it's actually often using a web backend to power everything, you know, just using a simple web app in a frame, if you will. And yes, you know, certainly the evidence of Qt being able to do things pretty rapidly is there all the time. And it's great to hear that as a kind of case study for something that can happen very quickly indeed. And something like those GPS things, yes, you know, that's all available via the APIs. And then I would imagine the developer in question has used Qt Quick and sort of in order to create that UI. And I know, having looked at this application myself, it's pretty attractive. And, you know, is an improvement over the C++ version, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, and having created this first version in 24 hours, I then went back to him and said, well, it really needs to have a dark theme for OLED screens, and also you need a satellite display to show, you know, what the signal strength on each satellite. No problem, he said. Another 24 hours later, there was the new version with all these features in, and he'd already submitted it to the Obvi store. I mean, it was just mind-blowing development speed. So anyway, GPS Info Qt, it's free in the Obvi store, so do go and grab it. And it's basically just displays the nitty-gritty that's going on behind the scenes with your GPS and your smartphone, because these days Obvi Maps doesn't show it to you, it just shows you where you are, which is not so much detail. Ewan, you wanted a comment?
I did, yeah. See, when you were talking to him, did you hear that music from the A-Team in the background that always plays when they're locked in a garage with welding going on?
I did. I wonder what that noise was.
You see, multimedia as well from Qt. Gotta love it. Gotta love it when a Qt comes together.
Oh, Ewan, please tell me you didn't just do that merciless pun.
Okay, Rafe, I didn't just do that merciless pun.
Enough. We're out of time, guys. Thank you very much for being on the Insight. Ewan's managed to stick it out despite the attractions of Sky and the museum, so goodbye up in Edinburgh.
Yeah, crazy fool webmaster. He ain't got no plane.
And goodbye in Hull.
Yeah, from David Gilson. Talk to you next week, everyone.
And goodbye from the puppet master himself, Mr. Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, well, you can catch us on @AAS on Twitter if you like. Don't forget all about cmbn.com. Comments welcome on this podcast, as always. Bye for now.